According to statistics, the average person walks past 36 murderers in their lifetime.
Oh my God, she was murdered.
It was a murder?
Unlike in Hollywood movies, they're not easy to spot.
Where is she, buddy? Where is she?
The devil made me turn her into ashes.
They seamlessly blend into our everyday lives, assuming roles as friendly neighbors, helpful colleagues, or even the person lying beside you each night.
I wanted to be out of jail. I couldn't wait till I got out. I was in there with someone who was clearly psychopathic.
Using investigative research and primary audio, Morbidology is an award-winning true crime podcast that shines a light on the darkest corners of humanity.
Through our investigation, we have obtained evidence, which we are not releasing at this time, which leads us to believe Jolene is not alive.
Tune in to Morbidology each week across all podcast platforms.
You're listening to The Murder in My Family, brought to you by Abject Entertainment. Be sure to check out some of the other great true crime podcasts from this network, including Missing Persons,
DNA ID,
Scene of the Crime,
Zodiac Speaking,
Beyond Bizarre True Crime,
Citizen Detective,
and Campus Killings. All of these podcasts are available for you to binge on right now, wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe where you're listening to this podcast so you don't miss an episode.
The views and opinions expressed by guests on this podcast do not necessarily represent those of the podcast, its host, or sponsors.
If you would like to discuss the murder in your family on this podcast, please be sure to visit themurderinmyfamily.com for more information. This episode may contain unsettling material or subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of The Murder in My Family. I'm your host, Mike Morford. In this episode, we'll be discussing the case of a 21-year-old man who was stabbed to death by a group of men on a Chicago street. Despite a friend who witnessed the deadly attack, the case remains unsolved a decade later, and his family is heartbroken that the men who did this have gotten away with murder to this point. We'll dive into this case after some quick housekeeping. Independent podcasts like this one depend on word of mouth to bring in new listeners. So if you find that you enjoy this show, please take a moment to rate and review it wherever you listen to your podcast. And be sure to introduce a friend to the show and invite them to listen. With your help, The Murder of My Family can continue to grow and reach a new audience. To learn more about the show or the cases we discuss, please visit themurderofmyfamily.com. You can also find us on Twitter with the handle @MurderMyFam or on Facebook at facebook.com/TMIMFpodcast. If you'd like to support The Murder of My Family and get VIP access to things like ad-free listening, early preview episodes, and bonus content of not only this show, but for every other podcast on the Abject Network of Indie Podcast, consider subscribing to the show with an Abject Insider subscription through Apple Podcast. For only $4.99 a month or $49.99 a year, you'll unlock a variety of listener benefits, and you'll be supporting the show in the process. Your support is greatly appreciated. And thank you to all of the supporters that generously donate to help keep the show growing and improving. One last note. Please support any of the sponsors that you hear on The Murder of My Family the way that those sponsors support the show. It's with our sponsor support that this show can go on and continue to provide a platform to share these stories with you in every episode. Thank you. And now on with the show. Robert Gonzalez was born on April 30th, 1992. He was the third of six children. When he was born, doctors warned his mom, Dolores, that he might not live long due to fluids on the brain. But he beat the odds and he survived. As a child, Robert was known as the smiling kid with big brown eyes that always made his family smile. Though he got average grades in school, he was very popular and had a lot of friends. He went to H.S. Carver Military School and was a member of the ROTC Raiders, something he really enjoyed and was proud of. As he got older, Robert thought about joining the Marines, but his fiancée Liz became pregnant with her son, Robert Jr., so Robert decided to give up on the military and stay close to his young family. He didn't complete school, but he was able to quickly earn his GED, and he landed a job as a truck driver. In January 2011, Robert and Liz welcomed their second child, a daughter, Anastasia. Robert loved family above all else, often bringing his kids over to visit grandparents, aunts, uncles, and cousins. While visiting, he'd ask his mom what she cooked, and told her how much she loved her food. When he wasn't busy working or spending time with family, Robert relaxed by watching movies or TV shows, with Titanic, Fast and the Furious, and Walking Dead being some of his favorites. In 2013, 21-year-old Robert seemed to have an entire future ahead of him, filled with love and laughter with those he cherished. But his life came to an end suddenly and violently in August of that year. On August 31st, sometime after midnight, 21-year-old Robert was walking home with one of his friends after going out to a club. The two were walking through Chicago's Belmont Cragen neighborhood when they were suddenly approached by four men. Near the corner of Central and Berry Avenue, they attacked Robert with a knife. He was stabbed multiple times and badly injured. His friend was able to escape and later tell police what happened. Just after 2 a.m., Robert was rushed to Advocate Illinois Masonic Medical Center, and at 2:47 a.m., he was pronounced dead. An autopsy report from the Cook County Medical Examiner's Office revealed that he had been stabbed 15 times. Robert's mom, Dolores, was in the hospital at the time herself, and when she saw a group consisting of several family members and members of her church walk into her hospital room, she knew something bad had happened. They were there to break the awful news to her that Robert was dead. Chicago PD News Affairs Officer John Marabelli told the media that this attack may have stemmed from an earlier fight. Despite this possible clue, no suspects have ever been named. There seemed to be no other clues, and despite an eyewitness, Robert's friend who he was walking with, and some of the men apparently being captured on surveillance footage, a decade after Robert's murder, were apparently not any closer to a break in the case. In a city struggling to keep up with recent violent crimes, solving a decade-old murder without much to go on seems like an uphill battle for police. Hopefully they have some DNA or physical evidence from the killers that may one day identify them. Robert's children, who were very young when he was killed, are now older and curious about what happened to their father. Dolores keeps them close. Besides her grandchildren, Dolores says all she has left to keep her holding on each day is her faith. She told NBC Chicago, "God is the only thing, and the only thing I can say is God giving me the strength. He's the only one." There are multiple people who played a role in Robert's murder, and that means that one or more of them may have bragged about what they did. So someone else, besides the group of four killers, may know what happened. But so far, despite a reward, they haven't come forward. If you have any information about the murder of Robert Gonzalez, please call the Cook County Crime Stoppers at 800-535-STOP. Or the Chicago PD at 312-746-8605. I sat down with Robert's mom, Dolores, to talk about her son's case and how she's managed to get through the last decade without receiving justice for his murder. That conversation is coming up in just a moment. Hey, listeners, I want to tell you about today's sponsor, EarnIn. EarnIn is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day, or up to $750 per pay period. Life doesn't happen bi-weekly, so why should payday? The money you earn can be in your hands today with EarnIn. Just download the EarnIn app and verify your paycheck, then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. Whether you want to get some holiday gift shopping done, fill up the gas tank, or pick up some groceries, whatever you have planned, EarnIn is a great tool to help you get it done. Make EarnIn part of your financial routine and join EarnIn's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about EarnIn, I think about financial stability and security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind." To get started, simply download EarnIn today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the EarnIn app, type in "My Family" under podcast when you sign up. It'll really help the show. Once again, please type in "My Family" under podcast. Subject to available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period max. See earnin.com/TOS for details. EarnIn is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. Hi, Dolores. I want to thank you for coming on the Murder of My Family to discuss your son Robert's case with us.
Thank you.
I'm happy to have you here. I wish it was under different circumstances. You've been seeking justice for your son now for 10 long years. Yeah. And to this point, you know, whoever took your son's life has gotten away with it. And what's scary is they may do something similar to somebody else's son, which has to be a terrifying thought. We're going to talk a little bit about what we know, what we don't know, and what clues there are, what clues there may not be, and just see where things stand. But before we get into that and talk about all that stuff, can you tell me a little bit about your son, Robert? Tell listeners a little bit about him and what he was like and some of your memories of him.
Okay, yes. He was just a joy. You know, his smile lit up the room, you know, and he was just a family guy. He loved his children. He left two children behind, Robert Jr. and Anastasia, and they're now 11 and 12. And his fiance, you know, they just were just a good family, you know, and things happen, you know, so that's what brought him back home. But he was so eager and always working, you know, like there was a time where he got laid off at a job and he's like, Mom, no matter what, I'm not coming home until I get another job, which he did, you know. And I was so amazed at him because ever since he was a little baby, he had these big old brown eyes and this smile that was unbelievable. And he just loved everybody, you know, family. He was always wanting his family together. And I so missed that so much, you know, and it just hurts that he was taken from us.
It sounds like he was very responsible, you know, to support himself and his young family. He wanted to work hard and go out and get a job. Even if something happened, he lost a job, he'd be out there hustling to get one. So yeah. Sounds like he had a good work ethic and was responsible.
Yes, he was.
So what was going on in the time leading up to when all this happened? Was everything in his life good with relationships with people? Was there anybody that he had any kind of beefs with, any kind of things that were, you know, maybe troubling or might have hinted that he could be possibly in danger?
No, not at all, because like his friends would come over and pick him up, and it's like everybody just loved being with him, you know, and that's what was so alarming. Like, what the heck? How did this happen? I mean, even when he was in high school, he still kept all them friends from high school. He used to go to Carver Military, and he was a top raider. He was going to go to the Marines, but then he found out she was pregnant, so he didn't go, you know, but it was just alarming to me, you know, like what happened, you know. But then again, he went to a club, and I instill in my kids, do not go to clubs because they're not what you think.
So the night that this happened, he had gone to a club, and could be any number of things that happened there. Was there anybody with your son that night? Any witnesses to what happened?
Well, it was actually one of his friends, his grammar school friends, and they were meeting another friend there for his birthday, because his birthday was the 31st. So they were all going out, but the guy he was with, which is alarming to me, gave the other two guys that were supposed to meet them the wrong address, and they went to another location. And that's what was alarming to me, and he was there. So they stood there till after it closed, and apparently they saw four guys at the corner, gangbangers out there, you know, because they were like harassing something back to them. So that's what I think it was, like a gang initiation out there. So they were trying to get somebody, and they got my son.
And so this, correct me if I'm wrong, this is in Chicago, and Chicago is known for some of its bad areas that have some crime or some gang activity. Had your son ever had any run-ins with anybody, you know, up to that point, any threats or any conflicts with any type of people that were in that lifestyle?
No, I mean, not that I was aware of, you know. I mean, as far as when he was in there, I don't think they didn't say that he was starting trouble, but I know when he left the place, these guys were talking. They said they saw in the video that these guys were saying something that they had went and I guess were saying something to my son. And they, in the video, they said that he turned around and looked toward the guys, and his friend started running. So when my son went whatever they were saying to them, because you can't hear what they're saying, they started fighting with my son, all four of them. And my son was punching, and they were stabbing him. So they stabbed him to death.
And that's so your friend, son's friend is there. He took off running. Did he like just keep on running, or did he stop a distance away and turn around and see what was going on? What was the story there?
Well, apparently they said that I guess he ran to the car and he got into the car. And that's all I know. I don't know exactly, because then the story gets kind of crazy, because I don't know if my son ran back into the car, because apparently the guys stabbed the tires to the car, but they never confiscated the car to do fingerprints or anything on it. And he got out. I guess they questioned him, and then he got out, and his family got the friend, and we didn't know anything about what had happened. He didn't reach out to us to tell us.
And how, and your son, did he pass away right there, or did he make it to the hospital?
They said, I got the coroner's and the hospital, the ambulance report, all the reports, and he did make it to the hospital. And it said, I think he had like maybe 15, 16 wounds to him. And they did try to keep him alive, but he bled out. I guess he bled out too much.
And as a parent, that's got to be the worst news in the world, to get a call to say that your son is in the hospital and he's not going to make it. How was that news when you got it? What went through your mind, and how did you handle that news?
Well, I was in the hospital myself. I'm sorry.
Please take your time.
I was in the hospital myself because I had an infection. And I was let go of the hospital, and they had called me that weekend, that Friday. And he was killed on that Saturday, that Friday. And they told me that they needed me to go back into the hospital because I have an infection in my blood, and they needed to get me in there. So my son was outside. And then he's like, "Where are you going, Mom?" I said, "I'm going to the hospital. I'll be back." He goes, "Are you going to be okay?" And I said, "Yeah, baby, I'm going to be okay." And he gave me the biggest hug, and he kissed my forehead. And he said, "I love you, Mom. I don't want nothing to happen to you." I said, "Don't worry. I'm going to be okay. You just behave, okay?" And he was like, "Yes, Mom." And then that's the last time I touched my son. So that morning, that Saturday morning, I had called him because I knew he had to go to work. I had called to see if he got up for work. And my kids had answered, and I heard them muffling the phone. They were covering it, and they're like, "She's on the phone, she's on the phone." And I'm like, "Is Robert there?" And they're like, "Mom, we can't talk right now." And I hung up, and I was like, "Make sure you wake him up for work." So then I was like, "That's weird." So I call back again, and they're like, "She's calling back." And they're like, "Dad's outside with the police." And I was like, "What? What's going on?" And they're like, "We'll call you back." And then the next thing I knew, like 2 hours later, my whole family was coming to the hospital, my pastor, some church members, to tell me he was killed.
That's got to be a hard news to see all those people coming in, because you know when people like that come from church and stuff like that, it's not good news. It's something bad. Did you know right away that something bad had happened?
I didn't know. I had a feeling, but then I was like, "What are you guys all doing here? I know you ain't coming to just see me, you know?" And that's when the nurse came in, and she's like, I have to give you your medicine now." And I go, "Why? You got to give me my medicine for what, you know?" She goes, "That's okay. It's going to be in your IV. I didn't know she was giving me like a sedative to calm me down for what news they were gonna tell me. So I just freaked out. I just screamed, "No, no, this is not happening."
The worst news that no parent ever wants to hear, for sure.
Yes. And I just still can't believe it. Mm-hmm. I can't believe it. And there's still no answers. That's what I can't believe, how these guys just got away with it.
I'm curious, you know, obviously you're left at that point with having to deal with this bad news. You're in the hospital, you can't do much yourself. Had to be a really helpless feeling. Not that you could have done anything anyway, but just to be in a hospital bed seems like the worst place you could be. You were left to sort of, you've got to make funeral arrangements, that kind of stuff, something you never dream you're going to do for your own child. But I assume at that time the police investigation was also starting. Did the police say anything at all? Did they have any clues? I mean, you mentioned there's video surveillance. Did they have anything to go with to say who some of these guys could have been?
No, they had no clue. They said that his friend had identified 4 totally different guys. So that looked bad on my case because he looked like he wasn't a reliable witness. So they couldn't even use that.
Did the investigation right away seem to start downhill?
Yeah. I just think that, I don't know. To me, it didn't feel like they did much. No investigating, because when I got out the hospital, I immediately wanted to go to the site where my son was killed. And my ex-husband now took me. And when we went there, there was no markings on the floor. Nothing like they would do in an investigation. So I was like, well, when they investigate, wouldn't they mark stuff, you know, like blood drops, or, you know, if he ran to the car, there should have been like markings, I would think. I don't know if they don't do that, but I just thought that was alarming that they didn't have that, you know.
Well, if they, especially you mentioned they possibly came into contact with the car, you think they would check for fingerprints and that kind of thing. How about DNA? Do you know if they checked for that?
No, I don't know anything. When I called to ask about the case, they said they have no new evidence and they can't discuss certain things with me because the case is still being investigated. So they couldn't share that with me.
Well, it's fair to say that, like, in a fight, especially with multiple people, your son's fighting back, they're probably fighting him and stabbing him. You know, there's a very good chance that some of their DNA got onto his clothes, maybe onto his fingers, on his hands. Sometimes people that are stabbing will slip and cut themselves on the knife. Their blood could even be on them. So hopefully they have all of your son's clothing and evidence still. And hopefully, if they haven't done it, hopefully they will do some testing for DNA, because there's a very good chance that there could be some on there. And maybe hopefully they would have checked his fingernails, that kind of stuff, because there could be DNA there as well. And that could ultimately lead to your son's case being solved, or at least maybe one or more of the people being caught. And then if you catch one of them, maybe they spill the beans on the other one. So I hope they will do that work if they haven't done it. So you mentioned the case, it seemed to stall out right away, that you didn't feel that they did a lot. Do you think they maybe were overwhelmed and it was just a hard case for them, so they stuck it on the back burner?
I just think that they, according to them, they had so many cases. So the detective I had, they were giving me the runaround. I have a whole book of times that I called the police station, and it was passed down to one detective to the next detective, and where I wasn't getting any calls, and informed that my detective was changed, you know. And just up until last year, they called me. I went to a meeting because I'm in a group called Moms of Murdered Children, and they did an outreach to the police station. So now, making the ruckus to why our cases aren't heard, we got liaisons that are like the mediators to like try to tell us what's going on. So he told me, like, they took us in a room, said that this is like the type of room us, the detectives, are in. So they got case after case after case. So it's hard for them to be able to pinpoint one case. I said, but that's not fair. I said, my son's been dead for 10 years. I said, and stuff that I've given them of hearsay after he was dead, you hear, oh, this one said something on Facebook or that, and I can't remember their names, but I gave them all that information through email and everything, and they still have not done anything. They said that's hearsay. And I was like, but that's something to be investigated. Why wouldn't you investigate it if it's being brought up? Somebody's saying something.
Sure. I mean, because a lot of times in cases like this, somebody will run their mouth or brag about it. And even if they're not involved and they're just trying to get some points, you know, looking like they're dangerous or tough or something, at least talk to them and see what their story is. To not even check out the story seems pretty troubling.
Right.
So I can imagine that's got to be awfully frustrating for you to really not make any progress and not have them check out every lead, because you want them to look at every possible angle, I'm sure.
Yes, everything. And
so
I've been helping with everything and making my contacts with them. I even tried to get his belongings, and they said they couldn't give it to me, or they lost it, or I don't even know anymore where his belongings are.
And when you say belongings, do you mean like his wallet and keys and stuff like that, or like his clothing? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I for one, hopefully they have that clothing and evidence, because I think there's a very strong possibility there could be some of his killer's DNA on there. Hopefully they have that and it's stored properly and they can one day test it. And the real fear here is that if they did this to your son, and they've been out there for 10 years, could they have done this to somebody else's son in the meantime? And that's got to be frightening for you to know that they could take somebody else's family member from them too.
Yes. And not only that, then the newspaper put our address in the article, you know, I mean, didn't give our direct house, but our location was bad enough. Like, why would you even do that, knowing there's killers on the loose, you know what I mean? So I thought that was very wrong of them doing that.
Sure. I mean, I wouldn't blame you. You know, something like this happens and then they're publishing your house or close to your house, you know, giving people an idea where it is. You know, who knows what somebody like that is capable of doing. So obviously we've talked about the case hasn't really gone far. You don't know what they're doing, if they're doing anything, how much progress they could be making. I mean, how hopeful are you, hopeful that you'll see justice for your son? Or are you worried that you'll never see justice?
Well, I'm hopeful that they could find something, but the way things are going, sometimes it feels like they're not doing enough to make them be caught. You know, it's just unbelievable how long it's taking. You know, now they got the cold case. They've got an award. They passed out flyers in August for my son, and they got a award for $15,000 if anybody comes forward. So I was grateful for that. But when I contacted the guy, he said that they didn't get no leads yet, you know, so I don't know how long that takes.
Yeah. And, you know, hopefully people do the right thing just to do the right thing to help your family out. But some people were motivated by money, so maybe that reward will cause somebody to come forward. And a lot of times you know, maybe there's somebody up there that knows something, but they're afraid of somebody, you know, because if they would do this to your son, maybe they're afraid to talk because they're afraid that they'd be in danger. Someone close to them would be in danger. So it sounds like a very tough situation in trying to get answers or get any leads. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've watched a couple interviews with you, and, you know, one thing you said that caught my attention was it sounds like you relied a lot on faith to get you through all this, which has been very, very important to you. What else have you done and you relied on to get you through these last 10 years?
Oh, it's been a roller coaster because there was times I didn't even want to live anymore when I first lost him because it hurt so much. And I miss him so much. And I can't explain to his children because it was hard to try to tell them how he died. But now their mother has a boyfriend and he told them, you know, and I'm like, whose business is it of him to tell my grandkids that? You know what I mean? Like, that was no business of him to tell them. But I have other children. I had 6 in total. Robert was number 3. But just all of us going through something, you know, I went to counseling a couple times and that didn't work. And then my kids, they just all are going through their own thing, you know, so it's been a struggle. One of my sons ran off to the army to escape, you know, and they're just like, some of them are drinking and I told them to stop drinking. I know you miss him, but you can't be like that. I said, you've got to pray and help God, ask God for strength because it's hard. It is so, so hard. And when there's no answers and nobody's helping, it's even worse because it's like, when is he ever going to be brought to justice, you know, for what they did to him? And then there was like, nobody would help my grandkids financially, you know. The Social Security said he didn't have enough points. And I was like, how you need points when they don't have their dad here anymore, you know? So I wasn't understanding that either.
And that's the you know, extra tragic part of these kinds of cases, because there's, you know, it's like a ripple effect. Everyone that is connected to the person that is killed goes through their own hell afterwards as a result. I mean, it sounds like it's still very raw for you after 10 years. Your grandchildren have gone through all of this. And I'm sure they're getting to the point where they're asking more and more questions. And it sounds like you've been trying to figure out how to dance around that and not tell them until you feel they're ready for it. But, you know, kids are curious, I guess, and they want to know stuff. And it's only a matter of time before they're going to ask. So just, it's tough all the way around, it sounds like, for you and your entire family.
Yeah, it's been really hard. And the holidays now makes it even harder. But I'm grateful that there's a few people who made ornaments of him. So he's like in East Chicago, Indiana, downtown. And over there at the Brookfield Zoo, they have a tree for murdered family members. So I'm grateful that at least I see his ornament. I wish I could see him, you know, but at least they're remembering him.
You know, before we wrap up, I think one thing that's very important is I want to ask, having gone through this for the last 10 years, everything that you've been through, the emotions, the roller coasters, hoping for answers, not getting answers, out of everything that you've learned and you experienced, what would you share with someone out there that's listening, that's maybe in your shoes going through something similar?
I would just tell them to really rely on God and find somebody that can listen to them and not be alone, because when you're alone, you get crazy thoughts in your mind when you lose somebody, and it's not good to stay alone. You have to stay busy and just love on your family, love on them so hard, and be connected. You can't get unconnected, because You don't know what your family member's going through, especially when nobody wants to talk because they don't want to make the other one sad, you know? So I have to hold all this in because I don't want my kids to cry and feel my hurt, you know, all over again. So I would just tell them to please just get know God more. Not only that, but stay connected with your family and don't be alone, because it is a roller coaster. It really is.
And I imagine, as you mentioned, this time of year is probably especially tough too with the holidays.
Yeah, it's really hard.
Well, you know, I hope after 10 years, I hope somehow they make some progress in the case and you keep the faith and they do find out what who's responsible for this so that they can be brought to justice. And we'll do our part to share your son's story and get the information out there so somebody listening might have that one clue that helps and maybe they come forward.
Thank you. I hope so.
Thank you once again for joining me for this episode of The Murder of My Family. I'd like to thank Sunny Landon for writing and research assistance in this episode. We'll be back here soon with an all-new episode of The Murder of My Family, and I hope you'll join me for it. But before you go, remember that every murder victim means something to somebody.